Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays from all of us at the Naismith Awards. We wish nothing but peace and safety for you and yours during the holiday time. We're going to dispense with the Jersey Mike's news and notes for this week, only because it's a sort of a lull between all the holiday basketball, but also we wanted to take and give Cliff Ellis a little extra time this week. He is our guest. He recently retired as the head basketball coach at Coastal Carolina. He's had a Hall of Fame career, over 800 wins, amazing job at Clemson, amazing job at Auburn. And he talks about the state of the game in addition to his unbelievable coaching career. So we're going to give Cliff the stage, and that interview will come your way next after this from Jersey Mike's.
Good news. There's a Jersey Mike's coming to your area. You probably got a ton of questions, so I'll try to answer some. Yes, the meat and cheese for every cold sub is freshly sliced right in front of you. Yes, we grill every hot sub right in front of you. No, we do not accept pirate doubloons for payment. Yes, we have catering, 12 subs in a box. No, our restaurants are not haunted. I hope. Okay, congrats on the new Jersey Mike's. A sub above.
Well, we are in for some fun today on the podcast. One of my very favorite people in the history of the world is joining us. He recently retired as the head coach at Coastal Carolina, but put together one of the most interesting and successful careers that any college basketball coach has ever enjoyed. It's the one, the only, Cliff Ellis, joining us on the Naismith Podcast. My friend, happy holidays. How are you, my boy?
Bob, I'm doing wonderful, and I hope you are. It's a great time of year. A lot of things going on. Of course, Santa Claus, I hope he'll come see you. I hope you haven't been too bad. But a lot going on. You got the NBA. You got college football. You got college basketball. You got a lot going on. It's great.
Yeah, it is a busy time of year, and one that we'll see without you on the sideline. You began the year and then called it quits. You were going to retire, you were telling me, at the end of the season, but you decided you wanted to stop. What happened? Why did you want to quit?
There's two things. Number one, I looked at it with regards to this year and finishing out. And I said, you don't need the wins. I mean, you really don't. I wanted to give my staff the opportunity to, have the opportunity to be on stage and get the job. So selfishly, I could have stayed, but selflessly, I wanted to give them that opportunity. But I was going to retire at the end of the year because I really and truly pretty much had had it with the transfer portal and the NIL. And then I thought, after we'd played a few games, I said, making a statement now may be more important than making a statement at the end of the year when everything's going on, the Final Four and all that stuff. But, Bob, the state of the game, I've never seen the college game in the state that it's in now. You've got 18-year-old kids. There's a transfer portal. And there's NIL. And let me preface this by saying I am for players getting compensated. I'm for that. The NCAA is making millions of dollars. The universities are making millions of dollars. Coaches are making millions of dollars. The players are what they come for. But there's got to be some principles here. There's got to be some transparency. There's got to be a cap on this. Nobody knows what anybody else is doing. I mean, you could give $500 million if you wanted to. Nobody knows what that figure is. And, a few years ago, Bob, with the NCAA, the university gave a T-shirt to somebody. It would instigate an investigation. Now, $1 million may get you a quarterback, or maybe that's not enough to get a quarterback. I don't know. But anyway, I had the transfer portal. I'd been at Clemson and Auburn, Power Five schools, and Power Five schools can somewhat operate, although it's still a problem there. But in a coastal Carolina, when there's nobody, I would develop kids, teach kids, and they'd be gone. I lost a player of the year to Michigan 3 years ago. I've lost them every year. And I said, well, I'm tired of going to a sword fight with a butter knife. And so anyway, it's and I know you and I have discussed this at points because we've been friends for a long time. But, you know, in the NBA where you are, there's no salary cap. I mean, there's a salary cap. There's no salary cap in college sports. You have a contract. You have free agency. But in colleges, there's no salary cap, no contract, and unlimited free agency, as you pointed out to me some time ago. It's just a mess, and something's got to be done. So I decided to make this year a mission to get my voice out and try to get some things going. And hopefully we can get, if we have to get Congress or federal government involved, let's do whatever. Fans are losing interest. Fans do not like this. I don't think coaches like it. It's just a mess. And so that's a long story, but that's the reason that I decided to do it at this time. Plus, I turned 78 last week, and it was getting time. But I don't like to see where the state of the game is, Bob. I really don't.
Well, Cliff, you do have a strong voice, and one that when you speak, people are going to listen. So let's turn it into a positive. What changes would you like to see here, at least at the start, to get this thing turned around?
Transparency. Let's know what everybody else is doing. You don't know what X school is doing. You don't know what Y school is doing. There's no limit. There's nothing. We need to at least know what everybody else is doing. And right now, there needs to be some type of contract with these kids. You know, there needs to be. You've got players that are suing universities. I know of a situation where a kid was told that he would get $500,000 for the year. Okay? He played that season, which was from the time he started school to the end of the season, about 6 months. He got his $250,000. And then at the end, he goes and asked the school, or asked the person, he said, well, okay, when did I get my other $250,000? They said, we agreed that it would be $500,000 for the year. You only work 6 months. That's all you get. Well, come on. Now you got coaches. Now you got players suing universities. Come on. I mean, that's the state of the game. The brain is not fully developed until you're 26 years of age. We're doing this with 18-year-old kids and 19-year-olds, and I don't want to see their lives ruined. I really don't. Bo Jackson said this. If I'd have had this during my time, I would never have amounted to anything. I never would have amounted to anything. He's an old Auburn guy. He's an old friend. But, it's just we're losing discipline. We're losing teaching. We're losing a lot of things, and we're going about it. You know, we've opened up a can of worms, and yes, players deserve to be compensated. I'm going to say that again. They do, but we've got to come to some reasoning. There's got to be some transparency where everybody knows what they're doing. And just like the NBA or the NFL, there needs to be a salary cap. There needs to be some type of free agency. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think something will get done, but voices have to be heard. And I think it's going to take 2 or 3 years. And maybe you and I can stand up one day and say, hey, yeah, we finally got this thing done. But I'm on a mission with this thing, and I'm hoping that it gets traction. It is getting traction. When you talk about it like we're doing, it gets voices and people hear. And I know I've talked with some politicians about it. They understand it, and I think we've got to get we've just got to get some voices involved, and we've got to get some traction on this.
Do you think, and maybe the toothpaste is out of the tube with the NCAA, but do you think that college basketball could stand united as a sport underneath the NCAA umbrella and do something just for college basketball? Do you think that's possible?
That'd be hard. It'd be hard. You can't go out. You can't go outside the NCAA. It's governing body. You create a problem. We've got to somehow, Bob, all come together. And there's a new head of the NCAA, and I think he will. I think he's working to try to get some things done. But we've got to get. I mean, you've got federal laws, you know, that are creating some of this. You know that, but there's got to be some way to, you know, do what the NBA and NFL are doing. I mean, there's got to be transparency and there's got to be a cap. That's my point. We just got to get to that. We've got to get to that point. That's the first step. And otherwise, and look, we're getting to the point where, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. We're going to have the NCAA tournament where it's going to be all Power Fives. And you're not going to have the Butlers anymore. You're not going to have the George Masons that you've had in the past. You're not going to have the Florida Atlantics. And those Cinderella stories, you know, you remember the Princetons. We can go back all the games that have been won that make March Madness what it is. That's going to go away. And you watch those television dollars, you know, those billions of dollars that have been made. You know, people, when fans get disgusted with something, the TV channel turns off and you don't get the revenue. Advertisers are not going to pay. And it's just something where, you know, there's got to be, you know, we've got to get over the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Cliff, we do have to spend some time really recognizing your amazing career. It's not too often that we get an ostrich farmer on the podcast.
Well, so, I'm retired from that, too.
But, you know, you've been a career coach.
Yeah.
You came out of Florida State and you jumped right into it. What led you first and foremost to high school and junior high school coaching? What got you the bug way back in the 60s?
Well, my coach back when I was raised, I had a coach that when I was a young boy in Chipley, Florida, his name was Philip Roundtree, who taught me everything. Little League baseball, basketball, football, swim, and taught me to swim, and I wanted to be like him. And it just propelled me. I knew in the eighth grade I wanted to coach, but I was a rock and roll singer. I was a rock and roll singer in college and had records, and I left a recording contract on the table with Atco Records, Fame Recording Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and all those songs by myself and the group called The Villagers. They're on iTunes today. You know, every now and then get a little bitty old check. It's a little bitty one, but it's still out there. But I was a musician, but I knew I wanted to coach. And when I graduated from college, I went straight into it. Then started writing and wrote some books, and it got me a collegiate job. And, you know, from there it went. I just had the passion for coaching. That's all I wanted to do. And was given the opportunity at a young age, 26 years of age, to go to Cumberland College. And I was always wanting to be a builder. I never was one of those Duke, Kentucky, Kansas guys. I wanted to build something. Cumberland College, you know, they had losing programs. South Alabama, the president wanted to go to Division II, but we didn't turn it around in 3 years. We went to the NCAA in four. Clemson, I turned the job down. At Clemson the first time, and I'll tell you the story on that. That was at South Alabama. We developed a top 10 team, and we were really rolling. I was also the AD. And I got a call from Dwight Rainey and asked me if I wanted the Clemson job. And I said, no, I'm not interested. He said, you really don't? I said, no. I said, Clemson's, that's the doormat. And I talked with Vic Bubas and people like that. No, you don't want to take that job. I had gotten a commitment from Vernon Maxwell. You know him. You're in Houston.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
I'd gotten a commitment from him in South Alabama. And I flew to Gainesville, Florida, and got out. And back then, there was no fall letter signing. And then went to his house, and he was sitting there with his brother. And I walked in the door, and they were holding hands. And I said, oh, my goodness, something's not right here. She said, Coach, sit down right here. I sat down, and she said, you recruited my son better than anybody. But he's always wanted to go to the University of Florida. And they offered him today, and that's where he's going to go. Well, we had beaten Florida in the NIT back when the NIT was a big deal. This is a long time ago. It was a big deal because there wasn't many teams going to the NCAA. We beat them, and Norm Sloan, I think he just got hacked, but we beat him, and he went and offered him, and he took it. I went to the airport, put a dime or a quarter in the payphone, called Clemson up, said, if you're still interested, I'll come. They said, we'll have a plane pick you up when you get to Atlanta. I went to Clemson. I took the job, and therefore I went to sign Vernon Maxwell, and I came back to Mobile, Alabama as a Clemson basketball coach.
So, what a great story.
And then, we won the only ACC championship. I wanted to build a program. I got tired of those stories like Vernon because we'd had great teams, but I couldn't beat Auburn and Alabama in recruiting. And I said, let me try the ACC. But everybody told me no. You can't do it there. Well, we were able to get a guy by the name of Horace Grant, and it turned it, and we started getting there. Heldon Campbell, Dale Davis, Chris Whitney, Sharon Ryan, and I got to quit naming names because I've had about 50 NBA players in my lifetime, and I don't want to miss some people that I already have. That's why I hate to start naming names. But anyway, went there and then left there to go to Auburn because Auburn was down, and my parents lived close to there. My mother and father's health wasn't good, and we won an SEC championship there, and then I got out, and I did actually some television games with you.
That's right.
And then Danny Ford called me, and the football coach at Clemson said, Chairman of the Board of Coastal Carolina is my good buddy. He wanted to know if he was interested in the Coastal Carolina job. And I was really enjoying television, but I hadn't gotten it out of my system. So at 61 years of old, I said, okay, Division I basketball, check. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, ooh, check. And then who am I doing it with? And I met with them, fell in love with it, came here, did this for 16 years, got out of it. So the programs I've been at have not been those. So I'm very proud of the players and coaches because we've been builders. And that's a quick snippet of my life. I could go into all kinds of stories, like I almost coached Larry Bird. I could go over stories that are unbelievable in my journey. I think I'm going to write a book on it.
Oh, you better. The book of Fast Break Basketball is not enough. We need the Cliff Ellis story. Yeah, Cliff, you're very modest about your singing career with the Villagers. I mean, for those people who don't know, I mean, this is one of the hottest acts in the Southeast back in the mid-1960s, and I chuckle every time, like at the ACC meetings with Mike Krzyzewski, and he would say, I hate to admit it, but Cliff can really sing.
Well, I'm going to give you a story. The one thing about the ACC, I love that time, and it'll never be the same. It'll never be the same as the 80s and 90s. And we just had a little reunion, Crimmins and Krzyzewski, myself. We just had a reunion a year or so ago, and we talked about those times, and it'll never be there again. But in the early 90s, they got up this idea, and I think it was Crimmins. Got up this idea. We went to a place in Myrtle Beach where we all took the coaches and wives, and there was a band there. And they said, Cliff, you're singing tonight. And I said, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. Well, they got the band to make sure that I got up, and they just kind of almost were going to tackle me. I said, all right, we're going to do this one thing as long as the rest of the coaches get on stage and be the backup. The only coach that wasn't there was Dean Smith. All right. You got every coach in the ACC up there. So we did a song called Stand By Me, and we brought the house down. But those were fun days, and I loved my music. I still love my music, and it got me through college. And it was a great time. I was able to go on stage with Roy Orbison, who was one of the finest gentlemen, played with Charlie Rich. I've been with the Temptations and Four Tops, Delbert McClinton. I actually played the tambourine on Etta James' song called Tell Mama, was able to shake hands and sign a contract with Rick Hall and Jerry Wexler, who ran Atlantic Records. So it was I've lived a wonderful life, and I've been very blessed to meet people like yourself, and I enjoyed the television part of it. I enjoyed that.
You see, friends, I told you we were going to have a great time with this guy today. I'm telling you, this is one of them. We got to know each other first when you were at South Alabama.
That's
and,
right. You were just
you know, you
young
were talking about
you
now, you
young,
were talking about
started.
You know, these rags to riches stories about, you know, teams in the NCAA tournament. And I think back to your clubs at South Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, you guys came out of nowhere and dominated a Sunbelt conference that at the time, this is, I mean, mid-major, I think, would be the accurate description. But
right.
There were times, Cliff, where we sent four teams to the NCAA tournament in one season.
Well, there's no doubt.
It was a heck of a conference.
Well, it was one heck of a conference. And I'll remember we got into – we got into the NCAA, and we played Louisville. And you remember Daryl Griffith?
Oh, yes.
All right, Daryl Griffith. Okay, we're playing. And this is back when there wasn't 64 or 68 teams now. And this is the first time we go. So I'm going to take you back to, I believe, it's 79. All right. 79 or 80, one of those years. But anyway, Daryl Griffith was on the team. And back then, CBS carried it, and Denny Crum was the coach, and we were down one with a minute and a half to go on CBS, South Alabama, against Louisville, Daryl Griffith. We missed a backdoor layup that would have put us up one, and there was no shot clock at the time, no shot clock. So we have to start fouling. So we fouled, and I didn't want to foul him, but we fouled Daryl Griffin. All right. So the clock's down. You know, I don't know how many seconds are left. We fouled Daryl Griffin. He banks the free throw in. Banks it in. He missed it. And then he hit the next one, and then we go down, miss a shot, and have to start fouling. But he banked it in. We could have won that game, and you remember Daryl Griffith and Louisville eventually went on to win a national championship, okay? We go back
yes,
to Mobile. We fly into the airport. The Mobile airport is packed with people. Then in 80 we go, and they do a ticker tape parade in Mobile, Alabama. I'll never forget those days. We beat Ohio State. But back in those days, and this is what – helped propel Cliff Ellis. We were at South Alabama, and you know who I was coaching against? Butch Van Breidekoff was at New Orleans.
Right.
Lee Rose was at North Carolina, Charlotte. Tate Locke was at Jacksonville. Gene Bartow was at UAB. You know, you look at those guys that came into the league, and not to mention Paul Webb, who passed away recently. I'm so sorry. And you had Clem Haskins. I mean, you talk about a league.
It was crazy. It was crazy how good.
But that's what propelled. I was able to be a part of a team that beat those people, and that's what got me, I guess, jump-started me. Because, hey, we were beating those type people, and they were great coaches. And, unfortunately, so many of them have passed away, and they were just such a delight. I mean – you remember Lee Rose's Chad Kinch team and
Cornbread
Maxwell?
Yes.
You know, that was
yes.
the final out of the Final Four team. And that's back when the Sun Belt was the Sun Belt, and Coastal Carolina's in the Sun Belt now. But you're exactly right. Vic Bubas, the coaches, the schools, it's phenomenal.
Masterful job.
Yeah.
Well, Cliff, we could talk all day. Gosh, this has been so much fun. You've got to come see us in Atlanta. You just have to.
Well, I'll do that. And
this has been fantastic.
We'll do it again. Hey, let's
see
how this goes, and let's continue this talk.
Okay, buddy. And keep the flame lit on the reforms that you want to see in college basketball, because you're not on the sidelines now. The sport's a little bit lesser for it, but you can still have an important voice, and we appreciate your time today. Thank you, sir.
All right, Bob. Thank you so much.
Hey, that's going to do it. That brings an end to 2023. We will join you next 2024. The conference season will be getting underway in earnest, and we'll have the latest from the men and the women as the Naismith Awards start to come into focus in the new year. Until then, Bob Rathbun from all of us in Atlanta saying so long.